Royals baseball, less than a month away, March 27th, opening day. Cool story came out yesterday. Didn't have a chance to talk about it on the program last night. Mike Moustakas is going to be hanging up the cleats. He is going to be signing a one-day contract with the Royals coming up in May and will be retiring as a member of the Kansas City Royals. And it's sort of this melancholy feeling for me. When in 2014, 2015, I was in high school. 2014 was my junior year, 2015 my senior year, watching the Royals get to back-to-back World Series. And it's wild to me that of the guys that were on that 2015 World Series team that took down the Mets in five, Salvador Perez is the only guy that's still on the Royals. He's the only guy still on a major league roster.
I was about to say, all of them have retired now.
All retired or they're free agents currently. I noticed Adalberto Mondesi, Danny Duffy, and Johnny Cueto, I believe, all three are currently free agents. So they're not retired necessarily, but they're not on a major league roster either. So, it's been 10 years. It doesn't feel like that long ago, but there's only one guy that is on an active Major League Baseball team that was on that team 10 years ago. And, you know, Moose was such an integral part of those Royals teams during that year. Had some really good years after those World Series runs as well. In fact, he made two of his three All-Star games after that 2015 World Series team. And that was his first All-Star game that he got there. That 2015 season, he hit .284, 22 homers, 82 RBIs. In 2017, he had 38 home runs, drove in 85, and hit .272. And then in 2018, of course, he was traded by the Royals to Milwaukee. He ended up being an All-Star in 2019 with the Brew Crew. He hit .254, 35 homers, 87 RBIs, and hasn't been on a major league team since 2023 when he was with the Rockies and then got traded to the Angels. Now he is going to be signing a one-day deal with the Royals, and he is going to be retiring as a member of the organization. I find that very, very cool. They're going to have a ceremony for him on May 31st. That's when he will sign the one-day contract, retire with the club, and they will have a celebration for him at Kauffman Stadium. And it's quietly becoming the end of an era, so to speak. And, you know, Salvador Perez is the guy that is still holding on to that era of World Series baseball for the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah, and who knows how many more years he has left. Maybe one or two more. What a time it was when you had I called it the three-headed monster of Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, and Lorenzo Cain. Those guys, it was just insane to watch them go at it. They were that core that brought you up. I get it. Those were the three-headed monsters I thought of on the offense and defense. And then when you had the pitch and you had HDH, it was like those six guys you could always you remember. My biggest question still to this day about Mike Moustakas is, how did that fan get the antlers into the stadium? That's the only question I still have.
Yeah, that's however he did it, a trend began that lasted through most of his tenure with the Royals, that big Moose chant that followed him around everywhere he went. Man, that 2015 Royals team was so good.
So good. Kendrys Morales.
Oh. Yeah. Of the nine guys that they had in their starting lineup, eight of the nine hit above .250. Salvi hit .260. Haas hit .297. Alcides Escobar hit .257. Moose hit .284. Alex Gordon hit .271, which was one of the best hitting seasons of his career. Lorenzo Cain was the team's leader in batting average. He hit .307. Alex Rios, at 34 years old, hit .255. And then you had Kendrys Morales, who hit .290. And I believe he was the silver slugger for DH for designated hitters that year.
Yeah, he was. And he had that huge home run against the Astros in Game 5.
Yep. Oh. Yep. He had 22 home runs and 106 RBIs. That 106 ribbies led the team. You had three guys with 20-plus bombs, Moose and Kendrys Morales, each with 22. Salvi himself hit 21. The only guy on the team that had a batting average below 250 was Omar Infante, who hit 220 at second base. So pretty impressive. Of course, Salvi, Alcides, Moose, Gordo, and Locaine all were all-stars for the Royals that year. I don't know how Eric Hosmer wasn't an all-star.
In 2015, he wasn't?
No.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Hit 297, 18 homers, 93 RBIs, won a gold glove, wasn't an all-star.
Also, in 2015, I heard you say Omar, but it felt like Ben Zobrist was the one that was starting those games. It was like, because he traded for Ben Zobrist. He was like that. It felt like when he came over, he was the glue that was like, hey, we're here to set the tone and we're going to do it.
And I agree with you. It feels that way. But Omar Infante played in 124 games for the Royals. Zobrist played in 59.
Well, also, but we got him in the middle of the year.
Well, I know, at the deadline and post-deadline, but Zobrist played a lot more than just second base. He played a lot of right field in spurts, replacing Alex Rios, who only played in 105 games for the Royals. Alex Gordon played in only 104 because he dealt with an injury issue. So Zobrist, after he got... You know, after the trade at the deadline to bring him to Kansas City, he ended up getting moved around a lot for this Royals team. Lest we forget Paolo Orlando, Jerrod Dyson, right? So both of those, they had 12 guys who had at least 200 ABs in that season. And Paolo Orlando hit 249. Jerrod Dyson hit 250. Zobrist hit 284. All in all, that team hit the ball. I mean, they had a 270 batting average as a team.
Well, their motto was, get on base. Don't matter how, get on base and we're going to steal. Like, that was it. I mean, Terrence Gore, for crying out loud, obviously wasn't going to get any at-bats, but that man, come ninth inning, okay, hey, Kendrys, if you get on, Terrence Gore's coming in and he's going to run those bases for you.
Yeah, Jerrod Dyson had 26 stolen bases. He was caught stealing only three times. Locaine had 28. Alcides Escobar stole 17 bags. It was just a damn good baseball team, man. They were fun to watch. You had the starting pitching rotation. Edinson Volquez, who went 13-9. Yordano Ventura, right? Ace went 13-8. Chris Young had a career year at 36. He went 11-6 with a 3.06 ERA. Guthrie struggled. He went had a 5.95 ERA. Duffy went 4.08, and then they traded for Johnny Cueto, who came in and he went 4-7 with a 4.76 ERA. But he turned it on, man, in
that
the postseason.
Game five, I'll never forget. Game five against the Houston Astros, man, he was lights out at the K.
Yeah, dude.
And I mean, most of us kind of were like on the edge when we won game four of that comeback. We were like, all right, this is our series to win, coming back to the K. But Cueto shut the door so hard that game.
You want to talk about excellent pitching, though. Let's talk about this bullpen. HDH, Greg Holland, 3-2 with a 3.83. Kelvin Herrera, 4-3 with a 2.71 in 72 games. Ryan Madsen went 1-2 with a 2.13 ERA in 68 games. He probably could have been an all-star that year, too. Franklin Morales went 4-2 with a 3.18 in 67 games. Oh, and lest we forget, Wade Davis, who went 8-1, 17 saves, in 69 games he pitched in, he had a .94 ERA.
Insane numbers.
.94? .9, that's ridiculous, dude. He gave up 7 earned runs in 67 innings. That's unbelievable. He struck out 78 batters.
It's so insane.
What?
And to think he was a starter to begin his career. That is just insane to think. Like, he was a starter, and they're like, you know what? It's not working out. Let's put you in the bullpen, and what's he do?
That dude, is his whip that year, his walks and hits per innings pitched, .787. .787 is otherworldly. Ryan Madsen had a .963. And you had other guys coming out of the bullpen. Luke Hochaver, he had a 3.73 ERA in 49 games that he pitched in. Jason Frazier, who pitched very sparingly, in 26 appearances, he had a 1.54 ERA. Overall for the year, the Royals had a team ERA of 3.74, and their bullpen had an ERA of like 3.2.
They
it's ridiculous.
Shortened the game because teams knew if they didn't get the lead by the sixth inning, it was over. Like, you go to HDH, you're not getting a run on them.
Yeah, I mean, you want to look at how much they used the bullpen that year. Edinson Volquez was the only pitcher that had over 200 innings pitched, 200 and a third. Second was Yordano Ventura at 163 and a third. And then third was Jeremy Guthrie, 148 and a third innings pitched.
And Guthrie went to the bullpen, if I remember right, late in the year. So he was getting more innings anyway because of the bullpen.
Yeah, he ended up pitching in 30 games. 24 of them were starts. Chris Young was a similar situation. He started the year in the bullpen and then moved into the rotation towards the tail end of the year. He had 18 starts. He pitched in 34 total games.
That dude is such a giant. Like, dude, I remember watching.
What is he, 6'10", right?
I think so, yeah.
6'9", 6'10"?
Yeah, because now he's with the Rangers, right? He's the GM?
GM.
Yeah.
He's the GM for the Texas Rangers.
For the Rangers, Chris Young, and then you have the GM for the White Sox and Chris Getz.
Yeah, dude. Royals baseball, baby. Gotta love it. So yeah, I wanted to bring up that story of Mike Moustakas going to be honored on May 31st. He's going to sign a one-day contract and retire a Royal, which is absolutely phenomenal. 913-586-7965. 913 in the text line said, I remember in 2011 hearing the Moose chant. I thought they were booing him. Yeah, I can recall that, like, early on when Moose arrived in Kansas City and you started hearing that and you're like, why are they booing? Like, what? You made a good play. I don't get it. Oh, Moose, that's what it is. Okay, that makes a little bit more sense. And that was a special time in Kansas City. And hopefully we are on the cusp of something that special again. I don't know if we'll ever see something like that ever again with this Royals team, because they didn't have any de facto, like, they didn't have any real superstars, right? They didn't have a Shohei Ohtani or a Mike Trout or a Bryce Harper on their roster. It was just a perfect just solution of guys. Just this group of dudes who came together and played great baseball, knew what their role was, and did it to the best of their ability, and it worked. The starters knew, okay, I just need to give five solid innings. Just put out five solid innings of work, give this team a lead, and then what happens beyond that is great. This Royals team knew if they got to the seventh inning with a lead, okay, we're going to win. With HDH closing the door with Herrera in the seventh, Davis in the eighth, and then closing it with Greg Holland in the ninth, you knew you had a win, man. You absolutely knew it. And that helped the Royals' bats because they're like, okay, we don't need to score 8, 9, 10 runs to win. We can score 4. We can score 5 if we need to, if we have a rough night. Just do enough to give your team a lead in the late innings, and you know HDH is going to close the door. As good a three-man bullpen as baseball has seen in the last 20 years plus at this point.
And I don't know if we'll ever see a replica of it because it was so dangerous and so hard to figure out. I just don't know if you'll ever see one again. It'll be a long time if you do.
It will. And I think the Royals have a really good possible trio of their own, possibly even a really good quartet of guys with Schreiber and Sam Long and Lucas Ursig and Estevez, who they signed in free agency. I think the Royals starting pitching can kind of look at that bullpen and say, okay, 5 innings. If we can give 5 good innings, we stand a really good chance of winning the ball game. Is it the same? No. Is it anywhere near the level of HDH? Absolutely not. But it's as good a bullpen as they've had since the days of HDH, for sure. A 620 in the text line said the Royals were the best team in baseball in 2015, and with the lack of a salary cap, that will never happen again. Yeah, I mean, it's hard. You gotta catch lightning in a bottle, right? You gotta make all the right moves at the right time, and it's all gotta come together perfectly for it to happen now. And especially with how much Major League Baseball is using this deferred payments thing nowadays, with big upper echelon organizations like the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Red Sox and others across Major League Baseball, it's gonna become increasingly more difficult for small market teams who can't afford to pay as much to win, and to win at the highest level. Not just get there, but win it is going to be extremely hard. 913-586-7965 is our number. A lot more to get to on tonight's program, including what in the hell is going on in Dallas. We'll talk about that next here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside JT Noah, your home for Kansas City sports. The Dallas Mavericks are having a rough go of it. They trade Luka a month ago for Anthony Davis, who goes down with an injury in his first game with the team. You had already lost Derek Lively. You lose Daniel Gafford. You lose, is it Caleb Martin? One of the Martins. Yeah, it was Caleb Martin. And now, All-Star guard Kyrie Irving out for the remainder of the year with a torn ACL. He left yesterday's game against the Sacramento Kings with a knee injury, went through further testing, confirmed it to be an ACL tear. So the Mavs, in the span of a month, have traded away maybe the second most popular player. I wouldn't even say maybe. The second most popular player in the history of the franchise, behind only Dirk Nowitzki, for a cornerstone piece all-star who gets hurt in his first game, who already had a history of injury issues. You lose your secondary center in Derek Lively. You lose your other center in Daniel Gafford. You lose the 3-and-D guy in Caleb Martin. And now you've lost your other all-star in Kyrie Irving. Oh, and on top of all of that, there's like a dust storm actively hitting the city of Dallas right now. Like, if you go to Newswire, you can see it on Twitter. Just look up like Dallas dust. You'll see like the entire city engulfed in like this whole cloud of dust right now. The entire Dallas-Fort Worth community is having a rough go right now. Oh, and also, we talked about this yesterday, they're raising ticket prices for season ticket holders. They said like 8.6% or something is what they're going to... Okay. The guts, the gusto, the gall of the Dallas Mavericks organization to trade Luka and then a month later ask for it, you know, ask your season ticket holders to spend more money. And the guy you traded Luka for is on the bench with an injury. And now your biggest piece, your best player now in Luka Doncic or in Kyrie Irving, out for the year with an ACL. Dude, Nico Harrison is getting fired. Now, like, imagine what happens. Just stick with me for a moment, okay? Let's think future view, right? Let's think about the most chaotic scenario possible. AD's hurt. Kyrie's now out for the year, right? Who knows what the timetable is for Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively or AD coming back for that matter. You've traded away Luka. What does the city of Dallas and Maverick fans do if the Lakers get to an NBA Finals? Imagine Luka and LeBron take LA to an NBA Finals. Like, they are going to be coming out with torches and pitchforks, and they are going to be storming the gates of Nico Harrison's home.
Nico is not sleeping with both eyes closed, I'll tell you that much. Oh, man, it's tough. Luckily, I'm not a Dallas fan. That is just tough. I see a lot of things going on. My favorite is all the memes going out, and some of the social, some of the media professionals actually thinking it's true. Like, I don't know if you saw, but Colin Cowherd thought that NBA Central, he saw a post and was like, "Oh, they're not selling Luka's jerseys no more."
Yeah,
and you can't come into the arena with it on. And he wrote a whole bit about it and did a speech on it. The memes are what makes everybody laugh, but you just got to feel for the Maverick fans. And just to put the cherry on top, they're like, "Yeah, we're going to up your prices." Like, yeah, I wouldn't do that if I was you, Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, Twitter is not a strong place if you're Nico Harrison, for sure. You were talking about NBA Central. They put this up yesterday. The Mavericks added Nico Harrison to their injury report. Again, this is a parody account. It's Anthony Davis, adductor strain. Daniel Gafford, knee sprain. Derek Lively, ankle fracture. Caleb Martin, hip strain. PJ Washington Jr., ankle sprain. Kyrie Irving, torn ACL. Jaden Hardy, ankle sprain. Nico Harrison, brain damage. Nico Harrison not seeing heaven for what he did to the Mavericks.
Jeez, yeah, just man. Not going.
It's a rough one. The Dallas Mavericks are not having, they're not having fun. Somebody said, don't forget about cheerleading in Dallas. I'm not sure I know what's happening here.
I have no idea.
Am I missing something? Is there something about... Oh. Oh, dear God. Oh! Why did I... Oh, man. Thanks for bringing that up.
What happened? Or is it radio effect?
There was a shooting at a cheerleading competition in Dallas.
Yes, oh, yes. My little cousin was there. So,
are you serious?
Yeah.
She all right?
Yeah, yeah. So she didn't perform till that night, and they just canceled that evening of it. So they weren't at the arena. But when I first saw it, they said it was a quote-unquote fight, and then people thought it was a shooting. Well, now they're saying it was a shooting within the fight. So over a competitive cheer of little girls, like, that's just lovely to have happen.
Yeah, it said it started out as a fight among parents, which led to panic in downtown Dallas. So it was not a shooting. It was initially reported that it might be a shooting, but it's saying that it was not a shooting.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah, I was like...
10 people injured, no shooting, however, as they had to evacuate the K. Bailey Hutchinson Convention Center, where the National Cheerleaders... Association All-Star Championship was being held. Rough week, rough month for the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Good Lord.
Did you see the one about where it said on NBA Centel, it says anonymous NBA executive believes Nico Harrison has a humiliation kink. And that's why he traded Luke away.
Man, he's not having fun. I'll
and then Pat McAfee today ran with it and goes, I think some people said he actually might have a fetish for this humiliation on his show.
Yeah, I'm seeing a video, Nico Harrison meet and greet, and it's just a dude getting jumped in an alley. Okay. Nico Harrison's 2025, and it's WWE highlights of men being thrown through tables. Dog, I can't help but feel like this is all Nico Harrison's fault. Yeah, I mean... Oh, Nico Harrison had, at one point, the Dallas Mavericks had Luka Doncic, Jalen Brunson, Kristaps Porzingis, all on the roster.
You know, Nico's on a really good run. He lost the Steph Curry under their deal.
Yeah,
so he's running. He's doing a real good deal of not clutching up.
No. Also on that roster included Derek Jones Jr., who's averaging double figures for the Los Angeles Clippers this year on over 50% shooting. And also at one point had Quentin Grimes on that roster, who's having a pretty good year for the Philadelphia 76ers this season. Yeah, that man's going to be out of a job. He's got to be.
You would think.
I mean, Quentin Grimes in limited appearances. He's only played in 10 games for the Sixers since coming over. But he's averaging 16 a game for Philly. 16 a game for the 24-year-old out of Houston, who started his career with Kansas, as we all remember. I'm sure there's some Jayhawk fans that are not going to be thrilled that I mentioned that. Yikes, bro. Yikes. I mean, he had him on the team this year. Like, Quentin Grimes was on the squad this season, and they traded him to Philly. And he's gone from averaging 10 a game with the Mavs to averaging 16 a game for the Sixers on 50% shooting from the field and almost 38% from the three-point line. That
Yuck.
Dude is terrible. Someone said, I used to be a Mavs fan, Steve Nash and Dirk Nowitzki era. I love seeing Dallas get things wrong, and not just the Mavs, them boys too. I wish Mark Cuban was still a part of it. That guy sucks. Not a Mark Cuban guy?
I think if Mark Cuban's there, there's no way this trade goes through.
No, dude.
So
if he was still the majority owner of the Dallas Mavericks, there's no way Luka's going anywhere.
Oh, heck no.
For Nico Harrison to trade him and then be like, yeah, he was fat on the way out. just wild behavior, bro. Like, what are you doing?
It sounds like someone that got his girlfriend stolen and was like, you know what? I'm sending you away. Like, I'm the girlfriend. It's just like,
oh, she didn't. Yeah, I didn't. You know, she didn't deserve me anyway. I'm better off. Okay. Luke is averaging 22-7-8 for the Lakers, who are playing pretty good ball at the moment. I'm trying to see. I think they're, what, top four?
They're second or in the West.
Second. Yeah, second in the West. Good Lord.
Okay, see, though.
Fair. But since Luka, I mean, they've won 8 of their last 10. Lakers are playing ball since Luka arrived.
Yeah, they were all worried about their defense, and I'm like, defense in the NBA has never been around for the last couple of years, so what's it matter?
I mean, it's wild to say it, but folks, the Lakers are a contender in the Western Conference. It is a possibility that they get to an NBA Finals. Luka and LeBron paired together with one another in a postseason, that's a tough team to beat in 7 games. But I digress. 913-586-7965. Let's talk some college basketball here. KU, K-State, Mizzou, all that coming up here next. You're listening to After Hours, Logan Weber and JT Noah here on 96.5 The Fan. We're approaching March Madness. We're already in the midst of it, right? Early March, we've seen some buzzer beaters and some wild things occur. But we're coming up very, very quickly on the end of the regular season. And what we're going to see coming up in conference tournament play and then ultimately the NCAA tournament. Of course, last night, Kansas had an opportunity for a big-time win, taking on the third-ranked team in the country, the Houston Cougars. And they come up short in that game. Jayhawks lose to the third-ranked Houston Cougars by a final score of 65-59. Poor shooting kind of doomed the Jayhawks, or I shouldn't say poor shooting. Poor ball control. Poor discipline. 20 turnovers by the Jayhawks. They played well defensively. I mean, holding a team like Houston to 65 points is no small feat. Cougars shot 35% from the field and from the three-point line. They only attempted 14 free throws, but the turnover margin was the biggest factor in this game. Houston turned it over 6 times. Jayhawks turned it over 20 times in the game. Perimeter shooting still pretty non-existent, despite the fact that the Jayhawks shot 42% from three. They only attempted 12. They were 5 of 12 from behind the arc, and 4 of them came courtesy of David Coit, who had 14 points on 5 of 8 shooting, 4 of 6 from three. He had 4 rebounds, 4 assists. Leading scorer for the Jayhawks, Hunter Dickinson, was 17 and 12 in the game on 6 of 13 shooting. KJ Adams had 15. He was 3 of 7 from the field, but got to the stripe 10 times and knocked down 9 free throws. So with that, Jayhawks are now 19 and 11 on the year. 19 and 11. So this is the first 10-plus loss regular season for Kansas since 1989. First time they've lost 11 games in the regular season since 1988-89, which was Roy Williams' first season at Kansas. That was when they were in the Big 8. They have not lost double-digit regular season games since the Big 12 was founded. That's wild to think about. They now have back-to-back double-digit loss seasons for the first time since the 1998-99, 99-2000 seasons. This is only the 26th time in program history that they have lost double-digit games. The Kansas basketball program was created in 1898. With this loss last night, Kansas now has no chance of finishing any higher than 6th in the league, where they sit right now. That would be the lowest finish for them in the Bill Self era.
And that's if they don't lose another game.
Right.
Which, I mean, they only got one game left, but
6th place finish is the lowest in the Bill Self era. If that's where they finish, they could finish as low as, I believe, 8th or 9th in the Big 12, potentially, if they were to lose their final game. You look at where they sit right now, that's the lowest of the Bill Self era, and if they do finish 6th, that would be tied for the lowest mark since the 1989 season, Roy Williams' first year as the head coach at Kansas, and back when it was the Big 8. They have never finished lower than 5th since the Big 12 was created in 1996-97. Rough year for the Jayhawks. But guess what? You're still an NCAA tournament team.
Yeah, you did so much with your non-conference schedule before you decided to have a dumpster fire of a conference season that you're still in. The problem is, the reason I would say that there's a problem, but it also might be a gold medal for them, is this. The bubble teams and the lower echelon of powerhouse teams this year is bad. Like, it is one of the worst I've seen in a while. Like, these bubble teams, you just saw Arkansas, who is fighting for their life on the bubble, decide not to score more than 10 points and a half. Yeah, you know what? We're just going to go out there and make three whole shots in one half, and somehow they're still on the inside of the bracket. That's how bad the bubble teams are.
Yeah, so, I mean, right now, you look at it, I have always kind of looked at Joe Lenardi's bracketology via ESPN, but last week I did that and somebody in the text line said, why do you look at Lenardi? He's not extremely accurate. And so I was like, okay, I'll look around. How about we look at CBS Sports? Jerry Palm is their bracketology, their March Madness bracket projection expert. He has Kansas listed as a 6 seed in the East region going to Providence to match up against 11th seeded Oklahoma. So a renewal of a Big 12 game.
And see, Oklahoma is carrying their non-conference as well because they have been atrocious in the SEC. And I know the SEC is great, but man, I saw someone say this. Kansas just wants the Missouri win to look as worse as it can just so it looks bad for Missouri.
I guess so. So yeah, right now, Jerry Palm's predicting a 6-11 matchup, KU against Oklahoma. KU wins that game, they would play the winner of 14th seeded Chattanooga and 3rd seeded Purdue.
And that would match up well for Kansas. You want a team that's slow and kind of not really going to do shooting wise. Because if Kansas gets up against a shooting team like, say, Missouri, then they're in a problem again. But Purdue is a slow, methodical team, and they don't have a big that can stop Dickinson. They don't got Edie anymore. So it's just like, all right, you don't have to worry about the 7-foot giant in the middle.
I mean, they're still going to have to deal with a 7-footer. I mean, that's just the way that Purdue operates. They are going to have some mammoth big for no reason whatsoever. I don't know how they do it. They just seemingly go around the globe and search for guys that are 7'2" or taller and actively recruit them without ever seeing what their basketball talent looks like. And it always works. I don't understand how it always works. Zach Edey, Isaac Haas before that. I mean, they've had guys that just show up on campus and they're massive individuals and they do their thing. I don't really understand how it works. I will say this, Purdue team can stroke it. They shoot 38% from three. I mean, they take and make the three at a really, really impressive clip. That's going to be an interesting one to see. They're not the most outstanding rebounding team on the planet. Their leading rebounder is Trey Kaufman Wren, who is 6'9", but he's averaging 20 a night. So that's if it ends up being that way, and KU's got a second round matchup against Purdue, KJ Adams, buckle up, right? And I don't know. He sort of fits that mold of like JT Toppin at Texas Tech, and you saw the Jayhawks really struggle with him last weekend. So I agree with you. This is on paper, this matches up well for Kansas, but there are some definite problems that you have to contend with. How do you deal with a guy like Trey Kaufman Rim and the amount of shooting that they have on the perimeter? Because like I said, 38% from behind the arc is striping it.
And I think Purdue has got a really good defense where they can turn it over. And if you have watched the recent game, KU likes to turn it over, and if you watched against Missouri, they had 17 in the first half, I believe. So, yeah, they love to turn it over.
Yeah.
They cook in turnovers like Baker Mayfield sometimes.
Yeah. Someone in the text line said, is it more kind of like putting it into a you go defend someone 7'2"? I don't know how Purdue does it, man. It's just so frustrating that they continuously find these gigantic individuals for some unknown reason. Meanwhile, Jerry Palm has Mizzou in the 4 seed slot right now in the Midwest region going to Seattle, where they match up with 13th seeded Lipscomb, the Bison, who have just claimed or could potentially claim the Atlantic Sun title. They're tied with North Alabama right now. Both teams are 14-4 in the league. They've got a matchup against Queens University here to close out the year. So if they end up matched up...
No, Queens is their tournament game. They've already started their tournament.
Oh, okay.
Queens beat the three-seed FGC, or Florida Gulf Coast, last night.
Ooh. So,
yeah, Dunk City's already out, if they still call them that. But
interesting.
Yeah, Queens won, but Queens cannot get into the tournament. They are still not in their 40 years. So.
Right, they just made the transition up from Division II.
Exactly.
Interesting.
As long as Mizzou does not play an Ivy school, I will be happy. I don't want to see an Ivy school. Ivy schools scare the living crap out of me. Not because of Princeton, what happened a couple years ago, but also this Yale team that is projected to win the Ivy League beat Auburn last year.
Yeah.
So I don't want to see an Ivy school, please.
Fair point. If Mizzou ends up winning that game against Lipscomb, again, these are all projections, but Jerry Palm is typically pretty good in terms of his expert predictions. They would play the winner of 12th-seeded UC San Diego and 5th-seed Oregon. So according to Jerry Palm, Mizzou could have a second-round matchup against Oregon in Seattle.
Oh, wow. How fun.
Yikes.
I wonder who has the home advantage there.
I certainly wouldn't. I wouldn't want to sign up for it. Then again, I'm an Iowa fan, so... Seems like Iowa's probably not going to make the Big Ten tournament.
Oh, yeah, I forget. Not every Big Ten team makes the
tournament.
Wow.
And they are dog water, bro. Let me tell you.
They're dog water.
They are so bad. It doesn't help that, like, Iowa's freshman player of the year from last season, Owen Freeman, went down with a wrist injury a couple of months ago. So they've been without their starting center, and they weren't going to make the NCAA tournament anyway. But once he went down, it was sort of like, pew. And they've won like two games since the new year began. It's been horrendous.
Oregon
so bad
would be
to watch.
A fun matchup though, because they have that big. I think it's Biddle, who is really can stretch you out. Him against Mitchell would be real fun to watch.
It could be. I mean, it's an intriguing matchup to say the least. Oregon's had a pretty good year so far. They're 10-8 in the Big Ten, but they're 21-8 overall. They themselves had a really good. They went undefeated in their non-conference slate of games. Jackson Shellstad, their starting point guard, is their leading scorer. They've got four guys who average double figures. Kayshawn Barthelemy is a good shooter, shoots about 43% from three. You mentioned Nate Biddle at 13 a game, seven boards. He shoots 33% from three. They're not the most outstanding three-point shooting team, less than 35%, but Shellstad and Barthelemy can put it up from the perimeter. You got to contend with those two guys.
Barthelemy was the one that actually went off a little bit last year. If I remember, he was the one that sent the game to double overtime against Crane, which that game was nuts in the March Madness tournament.
Yeah. So it's going to be an interesting year, to say the least, in March Madness. But as of right now, Jerry Palm of CBS Sports has Kansas as a 6 and currently has the Missouri Tigers listed as a 4 seed. Right now, he's got the number one overall seed being the Duke Blue Devils.
Wait, what? The number one overall?
He's got them as the number one overall seed.
That, wow. That's...
In the East region, he's got them as the one.
Oh, I thought you were saying that's the number one overall pick.
Oh, I mean, that's the way it looks here on paper, but now that I look at it...
I was about to say, Auburn better be the number one overall where they get to pick their home court.
Yes. Looking at it overall here, That was sort of like he had it listed by region of who the one seeds were and two seeds and whatnot. But the one number one overall seed is Auburn out of the South region. The second number one seed is Duke. And then you've got Tennessee and Houston as the ones. Then you've got Alabama, Florida, Michigan State, Wisconsin. So just looking at the two seeds, you've got four teams out of the SEC along the one or two seed line.
And two of them were beat by Mizzou, just saying.
Yeah. You've got two teams out of the Big Ten on the two seed line, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Duke out of the Big 12, Houston out of the Big 12, and Duke out of the ACC. So that's kind of a fascinating one to watch. Four teams out of the SEC in the top two seed lines. Three seeds, Purdue, Michigan, St. John's, and A&M. So a couple more Big Ten teams there and another out of the SEC. Our first Big East team. And then the four seed line, Marquette out of the Big East, Zoo, SEC, and a couple of Big 12 schools with Texas Tech and Iowa State. 913-586-7965. We will take our final break of the program here, come back, and wrap things up here on tonight's edition of After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside my producer for tonight's show, JT Noah, right here on your home for Kansas City sports. Back here one final time to wrap things up on this Tuesday night edition of After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you, my producer for tonight's show, JT Noah. We will not have After Hours programming for you guys tomorrow night or Thursday night. Tomorrow night, we've got K-State basketball taking place here at 96.5. And on Thursday, we've got Royals baseball that will be going on as well. We'll have Hot Stove with Vern to kick things off at 6 o'clock. And then at 7, Royals spring training baseball. So no After Hours tomorrow or Thursday. We will be back with you on Friday. I'll be here in studio giving you the latest over the course of 3 hours. So taking a look here as we wrap up the final couple minutes of the show here this evening. Mentioned Mike Moustakas going to be honored by the Royals on May 31st, signing a one-day contract to retire a member of the Kansas City Royals. Very, very cool story there surrounding him. We talked about the latest with the Chiefs. A big thank you to Chris Unocero for joining us in the 6 o'clock hour, talking some NFL draft and combine superlatives from the weekend. We also had Jordan Foote on with us at 7:30 talking about what's going on, what the latest is with the Kansas City Chiefs here this offseason, what do you make of the Trey Smith franchise tag, what that means for the possibility of a long-term extension, what is a realistic production standpoint for Travis Kelce this year, coming back for what is presumably going to be his last season in the National Football League. Last segment, we were talking college basketball. Mentioned Kansas's loss to Houston last night. Mizzou's got a big one tomorrow night. They are going on the road to the Lloyd Noble Center in Norman to take on Oklahoma. It's their second to last game of the year. It's their road regular season finale against the Sooners. Oklahoma, mentioned Jerry Palm has them as an 11 seed, so they are firmly on the bubble right now. They are bottom three in the SEC. Bottom three. LSU and South Carolina are the only teams in the SEC with a worse record in the league this year. But Oklahoma went 13-1 during their non-con, and that has certainly been a boon for them as they try to stay in the NCAA tournament hunt. For Mizzou, a win keeps you in contention for a top four seed in the SEC tournament. Right now, they're sitting in fifth place in the Southeast Conference. Tennessee is 11-5, and they're in fourth. So you get a win, you move to 11-6 with a regular season finale waiting against Kentucky this weekend, the 19th ranked team in the country. Wildcats right now are sitting at 9-8. In the SEC. So there's still a lot of room for movement there.
And they just destroyed LSU tonight by 31. So,
yeah.
But Mizzou's only lost one game all season in Columbia. And it was pretty much a buzzer beater to A&M. So
there's a lot of room for movement if you're Mizzou. Sitting at 10-6 right now, you win both games and you get to 12-6 in the SEC. You give yourself a really good shot at getting into a number four seed. At worst, you'd be the five, which is massive, as good as the SEC has been this year. You lose both of those games, you fall to 10-8, and you give teams like Kentucky, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt even, who just beat you last weekend, Texas A&M, and Ole Miss are all within two games of you right now. So you lose two games, those teams have a chance to leapfrog you, and you go from possibly being a four or a five in the SEC tournament to maybe an 8 or a 9. That is a huge shift for this Mizzou team that's trying to stay along that four seed line and still has an outside shot at being able to get creep up into the three seed line if you can maneuver it, right? If you can make that happen, that would be huge for the Missouri Tigers. K-State has a matchup tomorrow night as well. They will be on the road against Cincinnati. That will be their final regular season road game of the year from the Fifth Third Arena. While right now, Bearcats are 9.5-point favorites. Cincinnati, despite having a better overall record this season, is actually worse in the Big 12. They're 7-11 in the league. K-State's 8-10. They've got two games remaining due to the Wildcats. They've got this one tomorrow night against Cincinnati, and then they've got a home finale matchup this weekend against 10th-ranked Iowa State. Woof.
And remember, Iowa State's going to come for a vengeance because they put a whooping.
They got embarrassed.
Yeah, they embarrassed Iowa State in Ames.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Cyclones got embarrassed at Hilton earlier this year. So I'm sure they've got that one circled to be certain. No doubt about it. And then for KU, they will not be back in action for a little while here. Their next game will be on Saturday, I believe, as they will be hosting 24th ranked Arizona to close out their regular season. As we were talking about earlier, Kansas right now sits at 10-9. They cannot finish any higher than sixth in the league. BYU's in fifth and they're 12-6. Baylor and TCU right now are both 9-10. So they've got two games remaining. Say Baylor and TCU both win out. Kansas is sitting there at 10-9. You lose this game to Arizona. You could finish eighth.
Remember, they also don't have the tiebreaker over Baylor or BYU because they lost to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for Kansas, you gotta win this one. Gives you a little bit of a solid taste in your mouth. Now, I will say, I was talking about Baylor and TCU. They can't both win out because they're actually playing right now as we speak. So that definitely helps Kansas's situation here a little bit, but whichever team wins this game right that's taking place right now between the Baylor Bears and the TCU Horned Frogs, which right now it appears like it's going to be Baylor. They're up 56-51 at the under four timeout,
which is who KU didn't want to win because of the tiebreaker scenario.
Right,
so.
Right. And you're sitting there, West Virginia's 8-10, Utah's 8-10, even K-State is 8-10. So you could have five teams that are 10-10 or 10-10 in the Big 12. And where do you go with tiebreakers? Things are very much in flux. If you're Kansas, win this game, continue to solidify yourself along that 6 or 7 seed line, give yourself a decent chance in the Big 12 tournament to try to make a deep run. And you're not going to miss the the NCAA tournament. Right, you are in the field of 68 for the NCAA tournament. That's not something to be concerned about if you're a Jayhawk fan. But your seeding could still be beneficial. Do you want to be a 6 seed playing against a high major as an 11? Another high major is an 11. That's an 11 seed. You surely don't want to be a 7 seed playing against a 10 seed, which is either going to be a really good high major school, or it's going to be another middle of the pack team out of maybe the Big Ten or the SEC as a 10. If Oklahoma is an 11 seed right now, where does that put some of these other programs that are a little bit better off than they are? If Oklahoma's a 10, what does that mean for some of these other programs ahead of them in the SEC, such as, say, a Vanderbilt? Right?
Yeah, they're just, I guess they're giving them the benefit of the doubt for going undefeated in the non-conference.
Georgia, possibly along that 10 seed line. I wouldn't want to sign up for that.
No.
All right, that'll
also
do it.
Did you see the tiebreaker that the SEC women's had to do? The 1 and 2 seed were tied, and they had a tiebreaker with all common opponents. They flipped a coin to see who got the 1 seed.
Hey, man, do what you got to do. That's straight out of Friday Night Lights. Billy Bob Thornton, shout out that phenomenal movie in the early 2000s. All right, that's going to do it. We'll be back with you guys on Friday. Again, no after-hours programming tomorrow or Thursday. Thank you for joining us. For my producer, JT Noah, I'm Logan Weber. This has been another edition of After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. We out.